In the realm of true crime, every crime scene tells a story. Every story has its truths. These are the stories from inside the crime scene tape that separates fact from fiction.
He was a media rock star. He was constantly in the news, written about, quoted in newspapers and magazines. And in terms of his career, he battled the mafia, German spies, and terrorists during his long career with the government. But what surprised me is that he's basically forgotten today.
In the early 20th century, William J. Flynn was one of the most famous detectives in America as head of the U.S. Secret Service and later the Bureau of Investigation, forerunner of the FBI. Flynn became known as the Bulldog Detective for his tenacity in pursuing leads. He was a formidable figure, 6 foot tall, 300 pounds, built like a fire hydrant. With a cropped mustache, he often wore a derby hat. Described by a reporter as a large, mountainous man. He led the chase for counterfeiters, took on the first mafia crime family in New York City, pursued German spies during World War I, and launched America's first war on terrorism against anarchist bombers after they blew up Wall Street. Yet today, William Flynn is largely forgotten, overshadowed by his more controversial successor, J. Edgar Hoover. A new book aims to change that and restore Flynn to his rightful place in history. In The Bulldog Detective, terrorism expert Jeffrey Simon provides the first full biography of this remarkable yet unsung American lawman.
His career took off right from the beginning because he was doing a great job when he started off and he became head of the Eastern Division, you know, the Secret Service. And at that time, again, his job is to go after counterfeiters, but one of the major counterfeiting operations was also this mafia group called the Morello Lupo Gang.
Born in 1867 in New York City, William Flynn took a circuitous path to law enforcement. He worked as a plumber, semi-pro baseball player, and Pinkerton detective, among other jobs. Flynn landed a position as a Secret Service agent in 1897 at the relatively advanced age of 30. He quickly distinguished himself going after counterfeiters and rose to head the agency's New York office by 1901. It was in that role that Flynn first tangled with the Morello Lupo Gang. This Sicilian-American criminal group terrorized Italian immigrant communities with a ruthless campaign of extortion, kidnapping, and murder.
It was Giuseppe Morello, who was known as the Clutch Hand. He was the boss of bosses. Ignazio Lupo, Lupo the Wolf. And in addition to their running a big counterfeit operation, which has brought Flynn and his men into the play in terms of following them and getting information and arresting them, but they always got off because nobody would ever give enough evidence against them. They were afraid of being killed. The Morello Lupo Gang was also involved in what was called black hand letters. This is extortion letters where they preyed upon wealthy Italian immigrants saying, you give us money or you're going to die. We're going to kidnap your children, which they did at times. We're going to kill them, which they did at times. We're going to blow up your business, which they did also. And so many of them paid, and some of them, though, didn't.
The Morello Lupo Gang marked the birth of the Sicilian Mafia in New York City during the late 1800s. It evolved into the Genovese crime family, one of the five families that dominated organized crime in New York City until the 1990s and the downfall of its godfather, John Gotti, known as the Dapper Don. Was this the origin of the Mafia in New York City?
Yes, it was. Now, I also thought of the origin of the mafia throughout America, but there had been other mafia organizations in New Orleans and so forth. But this was the birth of the New York mafia. Both Morello and Lupo came over in the late 1800s from Sicily.
Sort of like the Don Corleone story from The Godfather.
Yeah, Corleone. That's where the region was, where Morello was born.
The Secret Service was formed in 1865 to combat counterfeiters, and this is still its primary mission. At that time, one-third of the nation's currency was counterfeit. The Morello Lupo gang weren't just counterfeiters. They were brutal, brazen murderers.
But they once left a body. This was somebody who they felt betrayed them in the middle of New York in a barrel. It was called the Barrel Murder Mystery. And it's almost like terrorism. You know, if a terrorist group wants to really frighten people or make themselves known, they do something different that's been done before. You know, everybody gets desensitized to the normal flow of car bombings or hijackings. So what the Morello Lupo gang did was leave this almost beheaded body in a barrel, which just shocked people in New York and shocked the country. And it led to more fear of the group. Now, Flynn got help from a very brave New York policeman called Joseph Petrosino in trying to bring down this Morello Lupo gang. But as I said, they could never get enough evidence to pin them to all the things that they were doing. But Flynn had this philosophy, which he called steady hammering. And here's what he said about that. Steady hammering, that's my doctrine and advice. It doesn't do to drop a case into pressure of a new matter, under pressure of a new matter. Reserve a place for it in the back of the head. Think of it. Hammer away at it. Here a little, there a little, until the men you are after are either apprehended or dead. So Flynn keeps after this Morello Lupo gang throughout the early 1900s.
NYP Detective Petrosino traveled to Sicily to gather intelligence about mafia members immigrating into New York City. The gang got wind of it and murdered him.
It turned out that after Petrosino's death a few months later, Morello Lupo gang started a major counterfeit operation again. These operations would go for a while, then they lay low, and then they start printing fake money again.
Flynn developed a mob informant who testified against Morello and Lupo.
There was other evidence that was able to convict Morello and Lupo of counterfeiting, and the judge, you know, knowing what these guys had been up to before, gave them the longest counterfeiting sentences in history, 25 to 30 years in prison. And both Morello and Lupo caved in when they were sentenced. They cried like babies. Morello had to be carried out of the courtroom. So this was publicized in the newspapers the next day. And it did a lot for temporarily demystifying this power, you know, that the mafia had in New York. Of course, it wasn't the end of the mafia, but Flynn got a lot of credit for, you know, bringing down this Morello Lupo gang. And that was his first, you know, major, you know, publicity victory.
Flynn attracted national attention for taking down the mafia. The Boston Globe described him as one of the greatest detectives in the world. In its wake, Flynn was named the deputy commissioner of the NYPD to clean up corruption that flourished under the influence of Tammany Hall. Powerful Democratic Party political machine dominated New York City politics for many decades in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Tammany Hall politicians used their control over police appointments and promotions to foster a culture of graft and protect illegal activities like gambling and prostitution. Flynn resigned after 6 months, telling a reporter that it was a thankless job that had become disgusting. He returned to the Secret Service and became its chief. Now, besides keeping America safe from counterfeiters, he faced a new adversary, a serious threat to national security at the beginning of World War I. I'll be back after this break. Hello, this is Robert, and I want to ask a small favor. Will you please tell your friends who love true crime to follow the True Crime Reporter podcast? As you know, it's one of the few podcasts where you can hear raw, unfiltered accounts from law enforcement experts, victims, and even convicted criminals. And please sign up for my free newsletter. The form is on every page of my website. Finally, I am so thankful to my Apple listeners who have given the podcast 5-star reviews. Your reviews on all of the channels are extremely helpful in spreading the word about this podcast. Now, back to our episode. Although the United States did not enter the war until 1917, German spies set up an espionage unit in New York City to sabotage trade with Great Britain. While American remained neutral in the early years of World War I, German spies set fires on ships carrying war supplies, bombed factories, and sowed labor unrest.
So President Wilson wanted to find out what the Germans were really up to. So he decided, even though this wasn't the Secret Service's function, he felt that they were the best unit to deal with this. And so they created a counter espionage unit. So Flynn put 10 of his best men in charge. And the guy who was in charge of this unit was a man named Frank Burke. So one day, Burke gets a telephone call from one of his men saying that he traced a German-American who owned a newspaper that was pro-German.
Burke spotted the German-American newspaper publisher and an unknown, well-dressed man leaving a building. It was a German diplomat who was a spy carrying a briefcase. Burke followed him onto an elevated train.
This is called the L train that was going uptown from Lower Manhattan to Midtown Manhattan. And when it came to 50th Street, the German diplomat, whose name was Dr. Hendrik Frederick Alpert, was reading a book and didn't realize this was his stop. And he jumped up and said, "Hold the door, hold the door." And he ran out, forgetting his briefcase. Burke then immediately seized the briefcase, left the train. Alpert then realized his briefcase was back in the train. He ran in there and a woman said, "No, somebody took it." And now he's looking all around for who took his briefcase. He runs into the street, and there he sees Burke walking away with the briefcase. And he runs after him, yelling at him. And Burke then runs away from him. So we have a scene of a Secret Service agent running away from a German diplomat who turned out to be also a spy trying to retrieve this briefcase. So Burke jumps onto a streetcar, it's like a trolley car, and says to the conductor, "Look, you see that guy running after us?" And Alpert was screaming, waving his hands, "Stop, stop, stop." So Burke says, "That guy caused a commotion on the L train. He's crazy. Keep going. Don't stop."
Flynn met up with Burke and opened the briefcase. To their astonishment, it contained documents detailing that the German spy had a $27 million budget, which is the equivalent of $453 million today, to fund attacks on ships carrying supplies to the Allies, sabotage, and to instigate strikes on the docks.
So it was a major coup for the Secret Service. The documents, they were leaked to a newspaper so that the American public would become aware of what the Germans were up to. And it was just a major, major story at that time.
In 1919, Flynn took the reins of the Bureau of Investigation, the predecessor of the FBI, at a time of unprecedented violence in the United States. The Attorney General announced the appointment, calling Flynn the greatest anarchist expert in the United States. It was the first Red Scare.
There was a wave of terrorist attacks that occurred in 1919. This group called the Galeanos had sent out letter bombs throughout the country, 30 letter bombs. And a couple of them exploded, but about half of them never left the New York post office because there wasn't enough postage stamps on it. And a New York postal worker, after reading about the first bomb that went off, said, "Wait, this looks like the packages I left in the basement of the post office. I better get back and alert everyone." And it was very ingenious contraptions. It was disguised as gifts from this department store. And the country had never experienced this kind of wave of package bombs being sent simultaneously. And then a month after that, 9 bombs went off in 7 cities in a 2-hour period, including at the home of the Attorney General, A. Mitchell Palmer.
What was the objective of the Galleanists? What were they trying to achieve through anarchy?
Total abolition of government, of religion. There wasn't any plan to put something in place. They were even against labor unions. They were against any kind of organization. So their targets were religion, were government, were capitalists. And it was among the most violent anarchists in U.S. history.
On September 16th, 1920, a horse-drawn wagon loaded with dynamite and metal slugs exploded outside the offices of J.P. Morgan & Company, the world's most powerful bank. The blast on Wall Street killed 38 people, incinerated the wagon and horses, and injured hundreds, shearing off the limbs of passerbys and sending a debris cloud high above the iconic street. It was the worst act of domestic terrorism until the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995.
And this was just devastating to the country and to everybody. But in terms of, you know, police procedures and gathering evidence, Wall Street didn't want terrorism. You know, terrorism wasn't good for business there. So the J.P. Morgan Bank, which was right by where the bomb went off and other business locations there, paid to get a cleaning crew come in and clean up all the evidence overnight. They just wanted to wash everything up, make it look spick and span for the next day. And they had signs everywhere, business as usual, wanting everybody to come back. So valuable leads were lost because of this cleanup.
Despite months of tireless efforts, Flynn's massive investigation failed to definitively identify the culprits. Agents traced flyers found at the scene to a print shop used by Galleanists, and the wagon to a blacksmith who'd shod the horse the day before for a man he said looked Italian. But without the driver or other direct evidence, Flynn lacked what he needed to make an arrest. The case eventually went cold. Flynn was unceremoniously booted out of the bureau. The case remains officially unsolved.
He had pressure his whole life to be the superstar because of all the things he had been able to accomplish. So people expected, you know, these things to occur. But he died depressed because things didn't work out towards the end. He thought he would get back to government at some point. But, you know, the call never came.
Simon believes the Wall Street bombing was the work of a lone wolf, a Galleanist who fled back to Italy. William Flynn's accomplishments were eclipsed by the young J. Edgar Hoover, who was in charge of the Bureau's Radical Division. Hoover would rule the FBI for a half century. Flynn's failure to definitely solve the case took some of the shine off his reputation as America's Sherlock Holmes.
There's no monument or statue of him anywhere. But in many ways, he was as important a figure in American law enforcement history in the early 20th century as anybody else. And he really, in my view, deserves better than to be the forgotten man of history.
Flynn opened a detective agency and published a weekly true crime magazine. He died of a heart attack in 1928. He has never received credit for laying the foundation for the FBI to become a formidable national investigative force. Flynn's example of incorruptible leadership and tireless service remains an inspiration. Simon says William J. Flynn deserves better than to be the forgotten man of U.S. law enforcement history. Please tell your friends who love true crime that they can bypass secondhand tales and get their true crime fix here with authentic stories straight from the source. Tell them that True Crime Reporter is one of the few podcasts where you can hear raw, unfiltered accounts from law enforcement victims and even convicted criminals. And sign up for my free newsletter on the homepage of truecrimereporter.com. It's your gateway to a world of knowledge and awareness in the realm of true crime and your personal safety. Thanks for listening, and until we meet again, be prepared. Don't get scared. This is Robert Riggs reporting.